Welcome to Extreme Genes, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome to Extreme Genes, America's family history show, and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. And we have a real photo slant going on today. First of all, coming up in about 8 minutes, we're going to talk to Maureen Taylor. She is the photo detective. We're going to talk about different ways you might not have thought of to obtain photographs of your ancestors, and maybe even those not too far back. And then later in the show, we're going to talk to a guy in Idaho named Levi Bettweiser. Levi has put together a passion project he calls the Rescued Film Project. And he basically goes out and finds undeveloped film and develops it in the lab at his home. And you won't believe some of the pictures he's come up with. Can't wait to talk to Levi later in the show. But right now, it's time to head off to Boston. And my good friend, the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org, David Allen Lambert. Hello, David.
Greetings from Beantown, Fish. How you doing?
Doing all right. What do you have for us today?
Well, I have one of the most interesting stories I think I've probably ever had across my desk. A Peruvian artist named Christian Fuchs. Well, he has a different way of honoring his ancestors. We go to the cemeteries, don't we? We write genealogies.
Yep.
He dresses up like them and has photographs taken.
You know, I've seen the pictures of this guy too, though. He's gone back, and I guess he had some rather prominent ancestors in, what was it, Chile? And So a lot of them had portraits done. I mean, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. So he dresses up as the men exactly as they are, poses exactly as they are, even does makeup. But he also dresses up like the women and does that too. But it's incredible how much he looks like the portraits of his ancestors when he does this. And this is part of his work as a photographer.
It's amazing. And the first portrait I saw was the one of his female ancestors. And I said, wow, that lady looks just like her. Wait, that's not a lady. And then he has one of his fourth great-grandfather who was a military participant in the Peruvian War for Independence. And, yep. And the costumes that he comes up with are just amazing.
They're incredible.
Yeah.
And we have this posted at ExtremeGenes.com so you can see what he does.
Moving on, you know, there's nothing better than getting up in the middle of the night and get a midnight snack once in a while. But you may not want to do it with Penny Rickoff's family heirloom.
Really?
Which is edible. She lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, and she has a cookie from her mother's first love from 85 years ago.
No kidding. We're talking what, 1932?
Mm-hmm. And apparently she said her mother was back in the day during the Depression, so people didn't have a lot of money. And her mother's sweetheart at the time had designed a heart-shaped cookie, and it spells out a bus in the icing, which was her mother's beau's name.
Yeah.
I just think that's amazing. I hope that some descendant down the road doesn't decide that they have to break into this. Mm. I'm sure dental work will probably be necessary.
Yeah, probably true. And, you know, it's kept in a jewelry box, too, with little bows on it and everything. But she treasures that.
I hope it lasts another 85 years for future generations to see. We've all had the time in our life, may it be at school or in the public library, where we've had a late overdue library book. Well, there's sometimes late, and then there's sometimes really late. Robert Lockman Jr. recently found a book in the basement of his Shavertown, Pennsylvania home and discovered that his father had checked it out when he was 9 years old.
Wow.
Back in 1941. But apparently the late fee for the book has been waived due to the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would have been a $554 fee.
And you like the way they responded. They said, look, it was due on December 2nd of 41. He was only 5 days late when the Pearl Harbor attack came. And they had more important things to do. So they're waiving the fee. But they're also displaying the book with the open due date on it, which I think is very cool.
My public library in Stoughton, Mass., where I sit on the board, we have an overdue book that was over 30 years old that we have on display that was found. And that's probably one they won't check out again. One of the things I like to do is obviously wish you and our listeners belated wishes on holidays that may have occurred when we've taped or when they've listened to the show. And so happy belated President's Day, but more importantly, happy belated George Washington's birthday.
Right, the 22nd.
Well, maybe. See, back in 1752, the changeover from the Julian to the Gregorian calendar made his birthday February 22nd, 1732, but that wasn't what it originally was.
Right.
His original birthday was February 11th, 1731/2 for the double dating of the year, and I was really intrigued by this, so I thought I'd do a little genealogical detective work. So, of course, on his birthday, at the busiest time of year, I called the librarian at Mount Vernon Fisher, and she told me that they have always pondered this question. And he never liked a lot of pomp and circumstance. He was a very simple man in that respect. But in 1790, there was a birthday party for him in New York. And at that point, they celebrated on February 22nd. But that being said, on February 11th, that same month and year, Philadelphia celebrated his other birthday. Father of our nation, owner of two birthdays. But that makes you think, if your ancestor was born in January to March in that time frame and was alive in 1752, did he or she change their birth date? And it right. makes me think of the old style, new style, and maybe as genealogists, we should include both when we're looking for diary entries and things like that.
Wow, good point.
Well, our blogger spotlight for this week has an interesting title. If you go to www.psychogenealogist.com. No, Anthony Perkins doesn't have a genealogical website from the grave. This is an actual psychologist, Stephen Hanley, who is interested in genealogy. I thought he has a very interesting blog and may entertain our listeners. And as we highlight the popular blogs in genealogy culture, we also like to talk about the not so common ones that you might want to give a little genealogical love to. So check out www.psychogenealogist.com and tell them that you heard them here on Extreme Genes.
All right.
Well, that's about all I have for this week. And again, if you are in Boston, swing by NEHGS, and we'd love to have you come in and see our library and talk to you more about genealogy. We've been doing it since 1845.
Wow. You've been working a long time, David. Thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Talk to you next week.
All right. Take care. And coming up next, we're talking photographs today. And I'm excited to have my good friend Maureen Taylor back on the line. She is what the Wall Street Journal calls the nation's foremost historical photo detective. And Maureen, welcome back. It was great to see you at Roots Tech a few weeks ago.
Oh, it was great to see you too, Scott. What an event that Roots Tech is.
It's incredible. The number of people that can see it in person and those who can see it online. And in fact, a lot of folks can visit a lot of the classes and the events online to this very day, and we'll be able to watch it on demand. So that's a great thing. Maureen, I was thinking about this a little bit as we talk so much about photographs today. There are so many different ways people can find pictures of their ancestors that I don't think they generally think about. We usually think, well, if I don't have them, how do I get them? Let's talk about some unique ways you know about.
Oh, there's a lot of ways to find photographs. I mean, there's the standard ways of Googling your ancestor's name, or, you know, Flickr has this relationship now with
right.
the Internet Archive, which is very cool, so that you can search just in the pictures. And I have to tell you a funny story. I was doing a webinar, you know, and I was doing some live searching on the Internet Archive, and I just found this picture of this guy. And the next thing I know, you know, when you do a webinar, you have this whole little screen over here on the right where you get messages from people that are watching. And
yep.
this woman goes, oh, wait, that's my great-grandfather.
And did she have a picture of him?
No.
Wow. So she just knew from the name and all that. Okay.
Yes. So it was absolutely fantastic.
You talk about serendipity, right? I mean, what are the odds?
The odds are pretty small.
Yeah.
But it happened. So there's, you know, there's the Library of Congress, there's the National Archives. All of these places have photo archives that you can search. There's the online archives and the, you know, the brick and mortar archives.
Yep.
And then they have places online where you can search. But one of the things that people overlook are their local historical societies, for instance, and who donates to those and who collects those pictures. I'm always looking for interesting images. And so I look in antique shops and I go to photo shows where other photo dealers set up. And I look at all the pictures and I see so many unidentified ones. But then I see so many with names on the back.
Right.
And you want to take them all home because you know, you know, and I know we can figure out who those people are.
That's
and
right.
reconnect them with someone.
Yeah, I've done that. I've actually seen pictures up on eBay before, and they'll show the front and back, and they may identify who the person is. And then I'll go to MyHeritage, or I'll go to FamilySearch.org and find somebody who's connected to that person and drop them an email and say, hey, just in case you want to know, there's a picture available of your person right there. But, you know, it's strange. Rarely do I hear back from them.
Exactly. I rarely hear back from them as well.
I don't know why that is. I thought they'd be more excited about it than they are. You know, an interesting thing that I've had experience with, well, first of all, this past week, I found a picture that we've been looking for 35 years. My wife's third great-grandfather had died young and before the photographic era, but he had a brother that was kind of the head of the whole family. He was a doctor. He was a minister in Crawfordsville, Indiana, named Caleb Wyatt Witt. And we'd read so much about this guy over the years, but nobody had ever come up with a photograph of him. And when we first started researching him in the late 80s, somebody said, well, there was a picture of him, but nobody was able to find who had it at that time. Well, now that all the digitized newspapers are out, I found a couple of stories that were written about him in the local newspaper of that area from back in the 40s and the 50s, and in each instance, they showed a photograph of him that they obtained from somebody back at that time. Now, unfortunately, of course, it's a newsprint photograph, but with a little photoshopping, I've been able to make it look pretty good, and I was really tickled to find it.
Yeah, newspapers are often overlooked. There are pictures in the paper as far as the 20th century goes and engravings before that, but there's so many ways to look for family photos. You know, my story with the orphan photos is that I buy them and then try to reconnect them the same as you, and so do a lot of other people. And I'm actually going to be talking about that in one of my Facebook Live events that I'm running. If you're on my Facebook page, which is Maureen Photo Detective, you'll find out when I'm going to have it, and you can join into the discussion. But one of the things that happened this past year was I was in an antique shop, and there was a picture of two guys standing in front of a store, and someone had written on it, Franklin, New Hampshire. And I thought, okay, so who are they?
Right.
When was it taken? You know, the sort of stuff that I do. And I wrote a couple of blog posts about it for my personal blog, and then I thought, you know, I can't keep this, even though it's a lovely photo. I want this to go back to Franklin, New Hampshire. And they are so over the moon to have it back in their collection, a piece of their missing town history.
Sure.
It was just sitting in an antique shop, and it cost me $5.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great service to do that.
It is.
And you don't know when the payday is going to come. It could come after we're gone, you know?
Right, and also there's that whole pay it forward kind of thing.
That's
you're
right.
Always hoping that somebody's going to find a picture of your ancestor that you haven't seen before.
Right. I looked for a great-grandfather from New York City for 30 years, and when digitized papers came out, I read a story that he had sent a photo of himself to Salt Lake City, Utah. So I learned that he'd been a volunteer fireman and that there was a volunteer fireman display up at a place called This Is the Place Heritage Park. And so I went up there and found this picture of the veteran fireman of New York City who had come through Salt Lake in 1887. And it had a key at the bottom with numbers and names. And I looked up, and on each little figure in this group, there was a number written in white on their shoulders. And I found my great-grandfather. And as a result of that identification, I was able to find him in two other photographs. So now I have three.
Unbelievable.
I call it my moose head, by the way. I have the big picture. It's like a hunter, you know, always looking to bag the big one. That's my moose head.
There you go. So, you know, the number one place that people need to look for photos first is with family, and that's extended family as well.
Yep.
So what just recently happened to me was my father's sister lived in California, and I thought my dad had all the pictures. One of her sons just recently died, and his sister was going through all of his belongings, and she knows that I do the genealogy stuff, so she said, hey, I have all this stuff, and I'm going to mail it to you. And in the stuff that she mailed me, I sat down with my mom, and we opened it, and we looked through the package, and there were all these pictures of my father at different points in his life.
Wow.
That we had never seen before. There he is as a teenager. There's a couple of more pictures of him in the Army. You know, I have pictures of my father, obviously, but I didn't have these. And so now I can do a whole timeline of his life just in pictures.
Isn't that incredible? And you were telling me off air about somebody who is actually starting to collect pictures or collect a certain town. Share that with us.
Right. There are people who collect very specifically. So, you know, I have lots of wedding photos that I've picked up over the years or whatever. But there's this one guy that I'm friends with on Facebook, and he collects very specifically one particular city in New Hampshire.
Because?
He lives there.
Okay.
And he's incredibly interested in Concord, Massachusetts. So I'll often run into him at these local photo shows that we go to, and I walk out with a bag of stuff, and he has one or two because he's very focused in what he's doing. And he's recreating the sort of photo history of the town one picture at a time. Like one time as the snapshots of when the circus was in town in the 1960s. Sometimes he'll write to me and he'll say, so I have a picture of this person at one point in their life, but I found this portrait of them, which I think is the same person later in life. So he goes to the shows and he collects Concord, New Hampshire. So if you've got a cabinet card and it says Concord, New Hampshire, he's buying that picture.
He's all over that, yeah. And, you know, anybody can do this for, say, their own hometown. My dad was from Bagota, New Jersey. My mom was from Albany, Oregon. I grew up in Kosciuszko, Connecticut. And, you know, you figure if you put search terms on eBay, all kinds of stuff comes up and you never know what you're going to find.
No, you never do. And actually, David is his name. He has inspired me to go back to my roots and collect things on Providence, Rhode Island, which is where I live.
Yeah.
So now I'm looking for images of this city that I might not have seen before, or interesting postcards or whatever. And then I will eventually donate those to an organization. But there's lots of people who collect very, very specifically. And those are the people that you want to find and follow. Now, I'm really into Instagram these days. And there's a lot of people on Instagram who are sharing photographs, random snapshots. There's one called, I think it's Lost Photos of Chicago. There's another one on photos of just Vienna.
Right.
If you can search on these sites for the location where your ancestor lived, and of course, the smaller the town, the better, you can maybe find some more family photos that you didn't know existed.
Absolutely.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, all the time now. And it's so fun because you can really kind of create your own strategy and find out how other people are doing it.
But I actually have a story for you about David Lambert.
Yeah.
This will be a surprise for him. So we were at a photo show together because we don't live that far apart. And he collects photos and I collect photos. And so we were at this photo show and he's going through the bin, you know, and flipping through the pictures. And all of a sudden he looks at me and he goes, oh, look, it's the minister who married my great-grandparents.
Yes.
And there he goes. He's like, okay, my day is made.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of thing.
Sure.
That can happen. It happens all the time.
She's Maureen Taylor. She's the photo detective. Go to MaureenTaylor.com. As always, Maureen, we run out of time way too fast, so we got to get you on again soon, all right?
That sounds great, Scott.
And coming up next, we're going to talk to Levi Bettweiser. He is a passion project guy who started a thing called the Rescued Film Project. And Levi, welcome to Extreme Genes. Nice to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are kind of a passion project guy, and how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, passion project for sure. The Rescued Film Project probably started it about 3 years ago.
Okay, and you go and find film that has not been developed typically for decades. And what I saw was a video of you actually developing film from World War II and actually displaying these pictures that have never been seen before by anybody until you developed them. What an incredible thing.
Yeah, like I said, it's an extreme passion for me. It's kind of an obsession at this point. But yeah, I mean, I look for and film is sent to me that has been shot but never processed. It doesn't matter the age or the type of film, we take it.
Wow. So how did this thing start for you?
Well, I'm a film photographer. I do a lot of film shoots. I do fashion shoots and portraiture and things like that, and I process all my own film. And about 3 years ago, I was, you know, walking around thrift stores looking at old cameras, and I noticed that a lot of them still had rolled the film inside of them. And so since I could process my own film, I decided to just start buying them. And when I got enough rolls of film to justify the chemicals and the time, I processed it. And it was about 30 to 40 rolls, and I was just shocked at how many still had images on them. And the project just kind of took off from there.
And you've involved some friends in it, obviously, because you got social media going on it. You've got great videos that people have put together with you displaying your techniques for this. Tell us about some of the rolls of film that you've developed that really stand out.
Yeah, well, it's so hard to pick just a few because at this point I've rescued over 20,000 images and processed, you know, numbers of rolls. But probably some of the more unique ones that I really love are definitely the ones you mentioned, the World War II images. And it's just amazing to see these soldiers, you know, in these snapshots, these exact moments. They're waiting at train stations and they're on these ships going over the ocean and they're on military bases. But then I've got some other ones. I've got images of President Eisenhower in Copenhagen doing what looks like some kind of a press conference. And then some of the more unique ones that I really particularly enjoy are the ones that people would shoot of their television screens. I've got a number of photos of people actually taking pictures of their television screens of historical moments. I've got several images of the moon landing and things like that. And so those are always really fun to see.
Boy, that is fun. Yeah, and you know what? I remember that too, watching it, but we never took pictures of it back at that time. Do people send you stuff now, or do you still just go look for it?
Well, it's both. So the majority of the film that I get is actually film that I've gone out, I've found, and I've purchased. I have a lot of relationships now with camera dealers and antique stores and things like that, and they'll hold on to rolls of film for me, and then I'll purchase them directly off of them. I still kind of go around and physically hunt for rolls of film once in a while, but that just doesn't get me nearly as many rolls. But then, yeah, to date, I think we've received around 350 donations of film from around the world, and some of those donations are upwards of 150 rolls just in one donation, so there's film arriving at my house nearly every day.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, rescuedfilm.com, and just saw this stack of stuff. Tell us now about some of this. You say that you're buying it from antique dealers and people around the country. They hold it for you. Do they put a value on this? You can probably get this stuff, I would imagine, pretty cheap because nobody really wants to claim it but you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it can get expensive, and it all depends on the source on which I'm getting it. I think there is, at least especially since I started the project, there's been kind of an interest in this medium, you know, exposed rolls of film that have never been processed. When I first started the project, there was a lot more film and it was a lot cheaper. Now the film is becoming less frequent, and I think people have started taking and wanting to do this for themselves. And so when you get into a situation where you have an auction or something, it can get a little bit more expensive. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's not too bad.
Once you've developed these pictures, and they're incredible pictures based on the video that I've seen, what do you do with them?
I scan in all the images digitally so that I can share them and put them out on the web, because I feel like that is the best way to do it, to, one, research the images, but then also to try and track down the people they belong to. So my goal right now is to create an online archive that holds all the images for people to go to and view and research. Problem is, our website isn't very good right now, so we put as many as we possibly can on the web, but then we're storing everything in a digital archive on our internal servers, and then we've got a physical archive, obviously, of the negatives, which is just in our headquarters.
Sure. So have you actually been able to find some of the families these rolls of film came from? Unless, you've obviously got them directly from some of those families, but there must be some like you bought in these stores. Have you been able to connect them back with the original clans?
So far, we've only been able to connect one orphaned, is what we call them, orphaned rolls of film. We got a roll of film from a camera thrift shop. We posted an image from that roll on our Instagram. Some woman recognized her father, and then I sent her all the images from the roll, and it ended up being several photos of her. And that was a newer roll of film, probably shot in the late 90s, and that's the only one so far. But as you mentioned, yeah, people will donate rolls of film to us that maybe belong to their late mother that was sitting in a drawer, and it turns out that there are photos of that person when they were a baby or a toddler, and obviously they'd never seen them. And so it's really interesting to see the reactions.
Well, I bet. Now, do you make any kind of business out of this where you resell these to people or to archives?
Like I mentioned, the project can get a little expensive, and it is a personally funded project, so basically I fund it with whatever funds I have left over. But we have started selling prints and other things to try and just kind of cover the costs of the project, the chemicals and all that. So that's the only thing we have so far. No, it's definitely not a business. It's more just a hobby.
Talk about the World War II pictures. How many images did you come out with?
So I don't know the exact number of images we actually ended up getting, but there were 31 rolls of film. Some of them turned out blank, and there were about 9 images per roll. So, you know, around 150 images, I believe, we got off of those rolls, and they're incredible to look at. Now, the more I've been putting them out there and the more research we've been getting back, it actually looks like they were probably shot more near the end of the war, if not directly post-war. They aren't combat photos, but they are these images that half were shot actually over in the States in Fort Indiantown Gap in Pennsylvania. And then it looks like they are travel photos overseas to France. And then there are shots of soldiers in train stations in Reims, France, and Normandy Beach. And they're all just in their iconic uniforms. And they're all just these stark black and white images.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Absolutely incredible. Have you been able to identify some specific locations?
Yeah, so there were two things. A lot of the rolls actually had little hand labels or handwritten on the roll, so you kind of already knew what the roll or where it was shot. But then once we released the video, we just had research pouring in. And I don't have it all in front of me, but I can tell you that we pretty much know exactly where every photo was taken, There's Boston Harbor. There's Rheims, France. There's some specific chateaus that were shot at that we know of.
Okay.
And then, yeah, the White Cliffs in Normandy. Those were actually purchased from an auction in Ohio.
Really? So you know they came from Ohio. You don't know necessarily who shot them. Have you been able to identify perhaps the unit that was involved?
We've had some people speculate based on some of the patches on the actual shoulders, the soldiers' shoulders and arms and things like that. And all the photos, there isn't any tight shots of anyone necessarily. There's a lot of wide shots. You see lots of soldiers, so it's kind of hard to identify individuals.
Yeah, to some extent, it's almost like news photos, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely looked like someone either, I don't know if they were in the unit or they were going along with the unit, but it was more, they were more interested in showing the wide scenes of like bigger moments as opposed to just shooting individual soldiers.
Sure. Is there a way for anybody who has an interest in this in helping you to research this and share the information they might know about it?
Yeah, so headtorescuefilm.com. We've got if you click on the videos tab, you can see the World War II video specifically, or if you just have any information or want to see more, just shoot us an email. We've got our contact info on there, but it's just info@rescuefilm.com.
All right, rescuefilm.com is the site. We've got a link to it on extremejeans.com. You can see the video of Levi developing these incredible photographs from the World War II era. What a passion project it is, Levi. Great work. And thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about it. And good luck with wherever this thing goes.
Thank you. I appreciate you helping spread the word.
And coming up next, our Preservation Authority Tom Perry still basking in the glow of hanging with the Property Brothers from HGTV at Roots Tech. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm recovered now.
Are you? You look good. You got a little more color in your face, and this is good. We're talking, of course, about Roots Tech, which is now about, 3 weeks in our rearview mirror.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're doing okay now. But you had such a good time because you were hanging out with the stars. I saw you with the Property Brothers.
Oh, it was so fun. I mean, I love these guys. I love their show. And when I actually met them, it was like I felt like a dwarf. And I'm 6 foot tall. They are so big. And they are the nicest guys in the world. And one of the neatest stories that we talked about is they were doing a remodel at a place where they tore out the carpet, several layers of vinyl. The subfloors had gotten bad, so they tore those out. And lo and behold, they find this little safe, this little kind of like a lockbox that's in the floor. And they're going, oh, wow, this is incredible. I wonder what's in it. And what they did, they got the name off the safe. They contacted the manufacturers and were able to get into it. And it had wedding rings in it. It had these special photos in it, all kinds of things. Because this family had built the house. They raised all their kids in the house. Then they moved on, and then they finally went to a retirement community. Now somebody else was there. So they got this. They were able to get a hold of the kids and return it to them. And this is like, you know, this is better than Christmas or anything.
Oh, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Your parents' wedding rings. You have these special mementos and stuff that you didn't even know existed. And you've got these really cool things. It's just so exciting. It just... Woohoo!
Yeah, and they present it on television. I mean, does it get any better than that, right?
That's just absolutely amazing, you know. And then you look at the flip side. They were doing a house reno at another place where they found a box of photos, found the people, went and said, hey, you know, we found these photos. These are so cool. You know, these real old things from the turn of the century. And the people go, oh, we don't want them. You can throw them away.
Yeah, there were cabinet cards in there.
Oh.
I mean, we're talking way back. Of course, they're not going to do that. They're making sure it goes to a historical society from the area. So they get it.
Exactly, exactly. You know? They know that this stuff's important. So they go and they put it a place where, you know, other people can enjoy it. It's just so sad that it happens. I've had people come into our store and said, hey, once you're done scanning our negatives, throw them away. Or, hey, here's a whole bunch of negatives. Don't scan these. I don't want these. Just chuck them. I go, no. We can put them up on the internet. Maybe somebody on our Facebook page or Twitter will say, oh, I know who these people are.
Well, and when we get into the facial recognition thing and that becomes a little more common, that'll become much easier to do.
Oh, and that's going to be fun. When that software really gets, you know, down in a price and it's really a lot more accurate, more like what the, you know, FBI and such has, it's going to be so awesome to take these negatives. You don't know who this person is, and you're going to be able to find them. It's just crazy.
I remember talking to my cousin, and he lives in the same area, actually on a piece of the property my grandfather owned for 50 years. And my grandfather was a builder. And he used a lot of his kids in building some of the local houses. And somebody was actually renovating their home. And they came over to my cousin and said, hey, you're not going to believe this. I found this in a piece of wood behind the wall. And it was my uncle's signature on it with the date from the 1930s.
Wow.
Because he had been working on the house for his dad.
You know, stuff like that is so cool. I've seen renos done where, you know, the different builders wrote different things on the blocks and stuff that just kind of made it cool. But that's neat where it's actually a family member.
Yep.
You know, could have something like this as a souvenir that's, you know, been gone for, 40 years whenever the house was originally built. And, you know, another thing kind of tied in with the Property Brothers thing, clear back a few weeks ago on Valentine's, Glenn Beck was on the radio talking about how he had gotten this picture for his wife as their a special Valentine thing. And he said, oh, he had to have it redrawn because a photo had adhered itself to the glass so he couldn't enlarge it. If any of you out there know Glenn, tell him to give us a call because there is a way that can be restored.
Absolutely. And it involves scanning and Tom Perry.
Exactly.
Knows how to make that happen. It's good to know those things, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You need to know. If you don't know, always ask.
All right. One of the things I think I really like about Roots Tech is the fact that we learn so much from listeners and people who come to our booths and share some things with us. You found out an interesting new little ditty.
You know, there's so many cool things out there, you know, and we study, but there's always people coming up, whether they're writing to ask Tom at tmcplace.com and asking questions, and it's like, I never thought about that before. So I do a little bit of research and find these things out. At Roots Tech, you're walking around, you see a new software, and you're thinking, if you tweak this little bit, you could do all these kind of things on it as well. For instance, there's a good app out there right now that's free. It's called Google Photo Scan. If you haven't gone so far and bought a shop box yet and you're taking pictures of pictures and you're having problems with glares, what it allows you to do is you can take several different pictures from several different angles, so the glare spots in different spots, and then this Google Photo Scan, it goes in and knits the best parts together, and lo and behold, there's no flare anymore.
Wow.
Stuff like that is just so cool. And, you know, preservation is so important. I had people come up and say, hey, I can get this scanner. It's, you know, 400 DPI. I want to do my photos. What do you think about it?
400 DPI?
Exactly.
No.
And I go, oh, no. You know, the best thing to do if you've got a lot of photos, get your friends, get your neighbors and say, hey, let's get together and have a scanning party. Because you can rent a top-of-the-line best scanner available for like $400. So why go buy something
not
for $400?
Not even. I think you can get it as low as $200.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. At times, they're running specials. Absolutely. But what you need to do is get a really high-end one, because then everybody's defraying the cost. Everybody's going to do the stuff together. And once they're scanned, they're scanned. And another thing at Roots Tech is we announced through Easy Photo Scan that now we're going to start renting high-end slide scanners. So you'll be able to rent a slide scanner, get all your slides together. If you got a few hundred slides, go to your local place that can scan them at a good DPI, whether it's a Replicolor type place that does billboards or advertising. If you've got thousands of them, it's worth your time to, you know, maybe even hire one of the neighbor kids or one of the Boy Scouts in your neighborhood to actually go through and scan them all for you, because it's not hard. It's easy to do. And by doing this, you're getting a lot better value, and you're getting the best scan you can get.
Well, and think about that whole scanning party idea here. I mean, if you can get it for $200 or even $400, right? You get 10 people together, $20 to $40 per family, and you can get very high DPI. We recommend, what, somewhere in the range of 1,200?
Yeah, I usually do 1,600. Sometimes if I have somebody wants to make a big billboard, we might go 3,200 or even higher than that. But yeah, if you're doing stuff at 1,200, that's really, really good. If you're looking at something like 200 to 350, you know, that's just not going to cut it. That's just, you know, you're wasting your time. It takes just as much time to do something at 200 as it does at 1,600 if you've got the right equipment. If you got some cheap stuff and you say, oh, well, this does 1,600.
Yeah, crank it up.
An hour and a half. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can do maybe a picture a day. So you want to make sure you get good quality. That's more important than anything. And we've had up on our website where we have, hey, if this is what your end use is, this is how big you want to scan it. If you're scanning really small postage stamp size photos, you're going to need a high DPI.
Right.
If you got 8x10s, most people aren't going to go much bigger than 8x10. Then it's not so important. But you need to make sure you get that detail in there. And as we've said before, if you've got damaged photos, before you try fixing them, make sure you scan them before you touch them.
Exactly. Because you might make the situation worse, but at least you've got it back to the beginning through the scan.
Exactly. And you can use programs like Digital Darkroom, Photoshop. There's so many great programs out there to use now.
All right. Great advice as usual, Tom. Talk to you again next week.
My pleasure.
Hey, that's it for this week. This segment's been brought to you by MyHeritage.com. Thanks once again to the photo detective, Maureen Taylor, for coming on and talking about different ways you can find ancestral photographs. If you missed any of it, of course, catch the podcast. Don't forget to sign up for our weekly Genie newsletter. It's free. You can do it at ExtremeGenes.com or on our Facebook page. Talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.